When I was here last time, I shared, I think, a couple of lectures from the series of lectures that I have under this title and subtitle, and this is number 4. I don't think I shared number 3 with you, but you know, if you invite me back, you will have the opportunity to be exposed to number 3 and perhaps number 5 also. This is number 5, number 4, and I would like to begin by asking a question. It is, what is the most effective aspect of diet / nutrition that has consistently been shown to reduce the risk of chronic health conditions, that means cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and so on, and to increase longevity? Okay? Now remember, that's a question. That means you have to answer. Okay?
Eating less.
Eating less. Okay? That's actually a correct answer, okay? The first one, very good. Now, sort of, okay? It's not necessarily eating less, but let me show you. Here's the answer. Caloric restriction. You know, that doesn't necessarily always mean eating less. And I will show you what I mean by that at the end, okay? That it doesn't necessarily mean eating less, but it means eating fewer calories, okay, from the foods that we do ingest. So, again, as an introduction, look at this quote. I don't remember any longer where I got it from, but this is an extremely wise quote when it comes to our health. A man is as old as his arteries. You know why I say that this is an extremely important quote? Because today we know that the risk factors that impact cardiovascular disease are also the same risk factors that impact many other health conditions. That includes type 2 diabetes. It includes Parkinson's disease. It includes dementia, Alzheimer's disease. It includes osteoporosis. And we can go on and on. It includes rheumatoid disease, you know, it includes a variety of other diseases. Now let's look at what happens as we age, okay? Now this is regardless of anything. You can have the best lifestyle out there, you can have the best possible diet. As we age, here's what happens with our vascular system, okay? As we age, we start secreting less and less of a compound we call the nitric oxide. Now, this is a very extremely important compound because nitric oxide actually regulates things like, notice, platelet aggregation. What does platelet aggregation mean? Okay, platelets, the blood cells in the body, right, in the blood rather, okay, they start sticking together. That's what aggregation of platelets mean. So when they start sticking together, would that be good or not?
No.
That's not very good. Why? Because there are actually some tiny capillaries, that means small blood vessels, in the body, through which all blood cells, including platelets, have to go individually. They cannot stick together because they will get what? They will get stuck. And if they get stuck in the brain, you may develop something we call stroke, right? And when they get stuck in the heart, you may develop something we call a heart attack, you see? So that's a bad news. But that what will happen, or what less synthesis of nitric oxide will lead to, they will lead to increased platelet aggregation, okay? And further, notice, increased vascular inflammation. We know that cardiovascular disease or atherosclerosis is an inflammatory disease. When we have less nitric oxide, we have more inflammation in the walls of arteries. Bad news for cardiovascular disease. Furthermore, notice when we have less nitric oxide, we have more something called ROS. ROS is an abbreviation that describes a group of damaging compounds in the body. that, among other things, have detrimental impact on the vascular system. Okay? And further, notice that we develop stiffer and thicker arteries as we age as a result of secreting less of nitric oxide. And the stiffer and thicker arteries means that we have an increased risk of developing higher both systolic and diastolic blood pressure, which means we may be diagnosed with hypertension. Bad news, because hypertension is one of the key risk factors for heart disease, okay, cardiovascular disease. Now, excuse me, when we restrict the amount of calories that we ingest, notice what's going to happen. It says here, notice, upregulates, calorie restriction upregulates endothelial nitric oxide synthase. Nitric oxide synthase is an enzyme that makes nitric oxide. Okay? It makes it in the endothelial cells. So when we restrict the amount of calories that we ingest, we will actually be able to do what? To secrete more of nitric oxide. You see? We will be able to combat the normal aging process in the vascular system. As a result of having more nitric oxide, we will have what? We'll have less platelets sticking together. We'll have less inflammation. We will actually have vasodilating effect, which means what? We'll have elastic arteries, you see? That's a very good news, especially if you have a salty meal. If you have a salty meal, you know what happens? Almost all of that salt we actually absorb into the bloodstream. And salt calls for water, you see? So the water from the different body compartments goes where? It goes into the blood. And we developed something we called hypervolemia, which means higher than normal blood volume, which leads to hypertension, right? Not if we have still what? If we have that vasodilating effect, because vasodilating effect means, oh, we have a little bit more blood volume, or we'll just expand, you see? And so the blood vessel will become, from being, you know, this in size, will become a little bit bigger. Not a big deal. They will accommodate that extra volume. And so we'll have a lesser risk of developing higher systolic and diastolic blood pressure. Okay? So that's just one illustration of the impact, the beneficial impact of eating less calories, or fewer calories. Okay? Now I want to show you the best experiment thus far that has been conducted to illustrate the impact of caloric restriction. This was an experiment that was done on monkeys, okay? 76 of them. They were included into this experiment between age 7 and 14. And on average, they live about 28 years old, okay? And so about half life or so, or a little bit more, they were subjected to this particular experiment. They divided these 76 monkeys into two groups. The first group of monkeys was subjected to this calorie restriction, which means these monkeys were fed with a diet with 30% caloric deficit in comparison to how many calories they would normally eat. Okay? The other group of monkeys were the control group, and they had no dietary restriction. That meant they could have eaten as much as possible. Okay? That was basically the experiment. One group ate 30% calories less than normally they would if they gave them unrestricted diet. The other group ate as many calories as they wanted to. Here's the impact. Okay? Notice this graph on the left shows percentage of animals without age-related disease. Okay? And in red, we have the data representing caloric restriction group. In blue, the control group. Okay? Notice that more of them, percentage-wise, were without age-related disease. More in the caloric restriction group in comparison to the control group. As they age, as the time progressed, notice, more of these animals, the animals that ate as much as they wanted to, developed some type of age-related disease in comparison to the other group. Then when we look at survival, notice that more of those subjected to caloric restriction survived over a period of time in comparison to the other group. Okay? In fact, notice, at any point in time, the control animals had, what does it say in there? 3 times the rate of death from an age-related cause when compared to animals under caloric restriction. 3 times that often they were dying in comparison. Okay? Further, notice this. You know, we have the saying in English, right? Seeing is believing, okay? So I want you to now look at this. Okay? We have pictures of 2 animals. This animal, this is the same animal here. This and this is the same animal. Okay? This is an animal from the control group. That's the group that ingested as many calories as they wanted to, as much food as they wanted to. Okay? And this is an animal from the caloric restriction group. Okay? Which of these look healthier to you? The one on the right, right? You know what's the interesting thing here is? These are animals of the same age. Seeing is believing. Here we see a grandpa, right? Here we see that the hair is missing. There's a visible or clear sign of aging, right? Here we have a youngster in comparison, still a lot of hair, brown hair, and not nearly looking as aged as this animal. So they were surviving longer, they didn't have as many diseases, and they were what? And they were looking better. You know, that's the impact of the caloric restriction. But there is more. Notice, animals subjected to caloric restriction had statistically significant preservation of gray matter. That means what? The brain, okay? They had better, structurally speaking, brain in comparison to the other animals, right? Gray matter volume in subcortical region, okay? Caloric restriction reduced age-associated brain atrophy in key regions of subserve motor function, and aspects of executive function. So they were able to think better. They had better cognition in comparison, and they had better motor function. That means that, you know, what do you call it? Not as many issues related to controlling whether arms or legs and things of that nature. Okay? Calorie restriction has been shown to extend health span and lifespan in rodent and primate models. Notice not only lifespan, but also what? Health span. So not only living longer, but living what? Relatively disease-free, healthy, okay? Accumulating data from observational and randomized clinical trials indicate that caloric restriction in humans results in some of the same metabolic and molecular adaptations that have been shown to improve health and retard the accumulation of molecular damage in animal models of longevity. In particular, moderate caloric restriction in humans ameliorates multiple metabolic and hormonal factors that are implicated in the pathogenesis of type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer, the leading causes of morbidity, disability, and mortality. Okay? Isn't it interesting? Now, here I have a list of some, not all, but some of the conditions that caloric restriction will help with. Okay? So increase longevity, reduce risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, brain atrophy, even endometriosis for women. Okay? But here's the question. How is this applicable to you? What can you do with this information? That's basically what I'm asking here, okay, in this question. Okay? Notice, this is data from the United States. This is the newest data available. Prevalence of obesity among American adults between 2011 and 2014. Okay? This is not overweight and obesity. This is just obesity. And we find here, when we look at here, all data, and this is for different age groups, that somewhere between almost one-third to or two out of five people are obese in this country. Notice, we have very good data based on what we read, that when we restrict the amount of calories that we inject, that we ingest, we will be better off, right? Okay? And yet, what do we see? The trend is what? The trend is in the opposite direction. We seem to be less active and eat more, and as a result, instead of being leaner and benefit from, you know, being leaner and ingesting less calories or fewer calories, we actually have a problem, the opposite problem, and that is obesity. Now, I actually have data here for Seventh-day Adventists. Notice, does the prescriptive lifestyle of Seventh-day Adventists provide immunity from the secular effects of changes in BMI? Okay? And so notice, this is for the Adventist men, okay? Or Adventist and non-Adventist men. This solid line shows us the trend among non-Adventist men. And what we find is that it slightly increases, BMI slightly increases, and it is slightly more or higher than what we find among Adventist men, okay? But what do we find for Adventist women versus non-Adventist women? We find over time that we find what? We find no difference in BMI between Adventist, non-Adventist women and Adventist women. Are you with me, everyone? Okay? In fact, if anything, notice, this data shows that at this point of time, the BMI was actually higher, is now actually higher among Adventist women in comparison to non-Adventist women. And here I have another set of data. This is based on the Adventist Health Study 2. And this is BMI, body mass index, okay, for Seventh-day Adventists, depending on diet, non-vegetarians, semi-pesco, lacto-ovo vegetarians, and vegans. And there is something significant in these numbers. And I wonder if you caught it already. Hmm? Say that again.
Less BMI for vegans.
Okay, that is true. Vegans had the lowest BMI, but that's not what I mean. There's something very significant in these numbers. Let me give you a tip. What is considered normal BMI? Normal BMI is considered 18.5 to 24.9. That's what normal BMI is. Overweight BMI is 25 to 29.9. Obese BMI is 30 and above. Are you seeing now what I wanted you to catch? When we look at these groups, with just one exception, with the exceptions of the vegans, vegans were the only ones with the average BMI in the normal weight category. All of the other categories among Seventh-day Adventists have the average BMI in the overweight category. Now, you know, we have a secular trend toward obesity, but it seems like the Adventists, at least many of Adventists, are not immune to that, right? If we have per group the average BMI in the overweight rather than in the normal BMI category, okay? Now, by the way, the difference, even though, you know, this is only 5 units or so difference, the difference between these opposite here groups is more than 40 pounds in body weight. So how can calorie restriction be implemented? Now, if we restrict calories, we will combat the obesity, right? And we will benefit from some of these benefits that we mentioned in the beginning that were shown in the studies with animals. So how can it be implemented? And here I have data, notice, for loss-adjusted availability of US calories per per food group. And there's also something significant here. Okay? We discussed earlier in my previous topic that we were given this message that included giving up meat. If we do that, okay, we'll get rid of, notice, we'll get rid of about 400 calories here. Okay? But even if you don't make any adjustment in here, I want to point out two groups here. Notice, 500 plus calories come from, notice, added plant-based fats and oils. Plant-based fats and oils. Added plant-based fats and oils, okay? And 369 calories came from added sugar and sweeteners. You know what these numbers translates to? These calories translates to? Let me show you. When we take the calories that we ingest as added sugar and sweeteners, 15% of the overall calories that we consume are ingested from added sugar and sweeteners. That means sweetened beverages, cookies, grain-based pastries, dairy-based desserts, things of that nature. That's where they come from, okay? When we add to this, or when we consider how many calories added plant-based fats and oils add, it's 20%, over 20%. When we add them together, more than 35% of calories come from added plant-based fats, oils, sugars, and sweeteners. That's why it is applicable to us. Because if we just, at the least, drastically reduce some of these, you see, you know, if you have a chocolate every week, if you have a chocolate once a month, that will be a difference, right? Here, just to use a very simple example. Now, let me give you more specific examples what we can do with it. I know not all Adventists drink coffee, but some do. And these are not extreme examples. These coffees that I listed here, okay, contain more than 300 or more than 400 calories, but there are coffee types that contain more than 600 calories, you know? So just getting rid of this would be very important. How about these? How about these? Ultra-refined and prepared in what? In deep-fried oil, right? That's why they contain a lot of, added oil and also a lot of sugar added to some of these. And let me give you specific examples. How many of you are familiar with these? Anyone? Okay. Now let's look at this. This is 3.5 ounces of ingesting this will give us 540 calories. This is an equivalent of how many calories we will find in 1.6 pounds of potatoes and 6.7 slices of whole wheat bread. Now, I would like to suggest to you that it would not be possible to eat all of these on one meal. But it would take a second or so to devour these. You see?
3.5 ounces, how much of that thing is? Half?
You mean in the container?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I don't know. We can look at the at the front of this. And
the 3.5 ounces, how big the container is?
Could be. I don't know. We would have to look at the label. Yeah. Here I have a few more examples, and a few more examples, and a few more examples. And you know, there is a reason why we call it junk food, because it is junk, you know. And we, being the temple of the Holy Spirit, I would like to suggest, should not ingest junk into the temple. How about this one? You know, this is actually very interesting. Allow me to show you some details in here, okay? Notice when we look here at calories, see it? Calories here, 170 calories. Now, in comparison to some other items, this almost sounds like a health food, doesn't it? Only 170 calories.
One-third of the bar.
Ah, that's the nuance. That's the key. You know what this 170 calories is based on? It's based on, notice, 1/3 of a bar. Now, how many people do you know that go and buy sneakers and eat 1/3 and then put it in the pocket, and the next third would be tomorrow, and then the next one would be the next one, you know, the next day, you know? Now, I want to show you, you know, we can take it with a grain of humor, of course, but let me add a sober thought in this context. You know, when I feel the saddest, I feel the saddest when I see in our churches young kids, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, being fed with this junk, with the loving grandparents and well-meaning parents. This is junk. This is not what these children need. They need the nutrients. They need the stuff that God designed for us to eat, not this junk. And you know, when we are looking in this, in the context of obesity, do you know that the weight or the increase in weight has been observed in people of all ages in America? That includes infants. Today's infants are heavier than infants from a few decades back. The increase in weight status, it's been observed in people of all ages. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say something. I not long ago, I saw a picture on Facebook, and they were like, there was a bottle of water, and it says, we feed this to the plants. And the next picture was the soda. Says that we feed this to the children.
Uh-huh.
If we are to give soda to the plants, are they surviving? No, yeah. But we don't give it to the animal or to the plants, but we give it to our children within our bodies.
Yeah, that's exactly
and
true.
And our school system is terrible. My daughter sends fruit and so on and makes her own lunch for her children and sends them water.
Mm-hmm.
Good quality.
You know,
and I was invited. My husband and I were for 2 years in a row. They had quote Grandparents Day, and they had this stuff that was brown, about like yay. It tasted absolutely terrible. I suppose it was supposed to be meat,
mm-hmm.
but I can say that it was the awfulest tasting stuff. And this is what they're sending for breakfast and lunch: crap.
Mm-hmm.
To our children.
Yeah.
And these are largely kids who come from families that don't really have too much money, so mm-hmm. they're getting free or reduced.
True. And you know, and I hear you, it is said that that's what our children are being fed in schools. But the school system has sort of a justification. They say they serve what the kids like to eat. If the children are learned in homes to eat something better, they will not want to eat nutrient-deprived, you know, fat-full and sugary type of foods wherever they are. I know this from my own experience. You know, when I go and I'm offered something to eat and it's not healthy, I'm not going to even eat it, you know. Because I'm used to eating something healthy. I am not just a vegetarian, I tell people. I like to eat healthy, you know. If we learn our children how to eat healthy, they will not want to eat something that is not. You know, I have more to you, you know, and more. And I want to all again show you some data. Potato chips, 3.5 ounces, 545 calories. And I want you to get this. 544 calories, okay? Notice how much of these foods we would have to ingest to get about the same amount of calories. 1 7-inch banana, 1 2.5-inch diameter orange, 1 3-inch diameter apple, 1 medium-sized Bosch pear, 2 cups of strawberries, 1 medium-sized potato, 1 medium-sized tomato. All of these together will be roughly about the same amount of calories. And again, I don't know if I can eat all of these on the same meal. It will be too much likely. This 2 minutes, probably, if not less. You know, is it more? Donuts, croissants, pies, cakes, brownies. And he had a dairy-based desserts. This is the governmental recommendations. You know, the one thing, you know, I've been teaching at the State University for 15 years now, and by law in the United States, the government is obligated by law every 5 years to issue new dietary guidelines for Americans. And it's just been so much fun to watch at the dietary guidelines as they have been issued. You know why? Because the newer and newer and newer dietary guidelines that are issued by the government are more and more and more like what you can read about in the Ministry of Healing or in the Councils on Diets and Food, you know? And so I would like to suggest to us that if the scientists outside of our denomination can put together dietary guidelines that resemble our dietary principles, it is time that we actually follow these principles, you know? Just by focusing on these guidelines to have the diet composed of grains and beans and fruits and veggies, we automatically get rid of this junk, you see? Because we then cook more like from scratch rather than buying these prepared items that are full of sugar and sweeteners and fat and oil that has been added to it. Notice I would like to appeal to you also. This is in the context of children, but I would like to apply this to us as an adult. This is from the Councils on Diet and Foods from Ellen White. If we are to walk in the light God has given us, we must educate our people, old and young, to dispense with these foods that are eaten merely for the indulgence of appetite. And then further, she applies this to children. Our children should be taught to deny themselves of such unnecessary things as candies, gum, ice cream, and other knickknacks, that they may put the money saved by the self-denial into the self-denial box, of which there should be one in every home. By this means, large and small sums would be saved for the cause of God. Now here's the question. Do you have a self-denial box? You know, I mentioned that I was in Israel. I was in Israel 2 times. The second time, when I was in Israel and I went on this tour called Meet the Orthodox Jews. On this tour, I learned something I would otherwise have never noticed. On every corner of the street, pretty much, they have what they call, actually from the Polish language, you know, a lot of Jews used to live in Poland, and so in a Hebrew, they, or the modern even Hebrew, they don't have some modern words, so they adopted this from the Polish word. The word is puszka. Puszka literally means box. You know what it refers to? This particular box refers to what we called piggy bag, okay? Where children store money, okay? Pretty much on every corner, many of these containers, and they have a little description. This goes to this and this synagogue. This goes to feed or whatever, you know? This goes to for this project and that project and whatever. And these Jews come and put money, you know, and that's fundraising, and then they use it for different causes, you know. Now, Ellen White here is talking about self-denial box, you know. When we have the urge to go for the Snickers, when we have the urge to go for whatever, stuff that in reality we don't need. It's killing us. It adds to the weight, and it adds to, you know, some of the health problems. Put the money, even if it's a dollar, to that self-denial. And you know, it would be, you know, I have actually at home, I have 1 gallon containers, 3 of them. One is for pennies, dimes, and for quarters. And this one in quarters is about 40% full. It's about $90 in there. When it's going to be full, it's going to be, I don't know, $200, $250 in it. You know, that will be a chunk of money to give. You know, that's my purpose. I would like to, when it's full, I'm going to donate this to some project that will will benefit children, okay? Self-denial box. I took this picture from Facebook. I actually have a Seventh-day Adventist friend from Tanzania, young man, and we are friends on Facebook, and he posted this on Facebook. This is actually his youngest brother. And what caught my attention more than anything else are these. You know, I've been to Africa many times. I've been to several different countries. And I've seen this in my own eyes. You know what they make shoes out of, oftentimes? Plastic bottles as well. Yeah, they...
Tires.
Yes, used tires, okay? They cut used tires, make holes, and make like straps, and that's what they wear. And plastic bottles, they flatten plastic bottles, and again, have a string, and that's how they walk, you know? I mean, you know, donating money for things like this. I used to go, I was in Ecuador four times with a group of 20 plus people. We had what we call mission trip, and we had what we call clinic. And we decided, we brought medication and clothes and stuff like that with US, from US. We decided we would buy shoes. We would buy brand new shoes locally from local stores. And then when these people came, oftentimes with three, four, five, six children, when they came to the very last station, they saw a dentist and physician and nurse and so on. The very last station was where they were getting clothes, a bag of food, and shoes, you know? And I want to tell you this one experience. I was on a cruise, and the ship got docked in Grenada. Have you ever been to Grenada? Beautiful island, great people. And we had a little bit of time in the evening, and I decided I'm going to go to a grocery store and see what they have in the grocery store. I didn't need anything because, you know, all the food was on the ship. But I had a little bit of time. I was curious what's in the grocery store. So I walked around, and I walked, you know, through every aisle, and then I walked outside. When I walked outside, this local fellow started talking to me. He was very friendly. And after a few minutes, he showed me a wound that he had in his lower leg. And he asked me if I would be willing to buy him a medication for this wound. And I honestly had no penny on me, but I had money in the ship. So I told him, look, I don't have any money on me, but I will be right back. I'm going to have to go and get money and be back and buy it for you. Well, this was like 5 minutes before nine, and they were closing at nine. So I was rushing back to the ship, and on the way, this fellow stopped me, another one, stopped me and said, can I give him $5? And I said, look, I need to go back to the store because they will close. I'll be with you in a second. I went, got the money. I went back. I bought him the medication, gave it to him, and then I'm walking back, and this guy was waiting for me. And he asked me again, could I give him $5? And I didn't have $5 on me. I had $10 bill on me. But I asked him, what do you need the $5 for? And he said, I would like to buy new shoes. Now, I don't know how old he was. I would say he was about 30 years old, maybe. And I had this $10 on me, and I grabbed the $10 and I gave it to him. And honestly, I could not believe what happened. This guy was running into the village. We were a little bit like outside of the town. You know, we docked in that harbor, and you had to go maybe, a quarter of a mile. And he was running, and he was screaming, I'm going to buy new shoes, I'm going to buy new shoes. He was screaming. I could not believe it. That's the joy that $5 or $10, you know, that's what I gave him, you know, made to this particular fellow, you know. There are so much needs. There's so much need. This is from Address Catalog. Let's get rid of this stuff that is killing us. Let's use it for a good cause that will benefit people that are out there, that no matter what they do, oftentimes, don't have anything. You've heard of the latest hurricanes, you know, Puerto Rico and, you know, other islands, and even went through Florida. And this is one of the pictures that I got from the internet from the hurricanes. There's so much need. There is so much need that we can contribute. Even with the little that we have, we can contribute, and in some of these countries, it will be a lot. With that, I have a custom, you probably already remember, to give my email in case you have any questions, nutrition related, if you send me an email, I'll be glad to reply and answer. And you also have the address of my website, where I have a number of different articles, and I have some videos, and you know, other free, completely free resources. My books are also listed on there. And you know, I'll be in September. I will be in North Augusta. If you would like to purchase a book, you can mention it to the pastor, and he will let me know. I'm going to bring those to you, or I can mail them to you also. Okay. So that's what I have for you this afternoon. If you have any questions or comments based on this, or anything else related to nutrition, diet nutrition, I'll be glad to answer questions if I know the answer. Any comments, questions? Yes.
When it comes to salt, I know table salt is no good. Everybody says sea salt is good. Do you know any much study on sea salt compared to any other like raw or Himalayan salt?
Yes, very good. So I actually have a what do you call it? I forget whether it's actually a presentation or an article on this very topic on my website also. But I'll briefly tell you, okay? So when it comes to the Himalayan salt, okay, there are many websites that make many different claims on Himalayan salt, claims that are completely bogus, completely unsubstantiated. There's no evidence whatsoever to back up many of these claims. Not only that, but in many of these websites, there are contradictions when you really read carefully and think of it. So, for example, one claim is that this is the purest salt ever because it's been kept, you know, somewhere in the Himalayan whatever region, right? And then in the same page, you will read about the content of the Himalayan salt, and you will read about stuff like arsenic and mercury and lead and polonium and radium, you know, and these are some of the most potent toxins that we know of, you see. And so, again, they claim stuff that you will help if you have high blood pressure, it will drop. Completely bogus, made up claims that are completely, have no evidence in any studies that we can point to. In addition, they also claim that in addition to just sodium chloride, which is what in table salt that we buy in a grocery store, the Himalayan salt actually contains a variety of other minerals. You know, in fact, they claim that there are 84 different minerals, okay, in that claim. Well, there were two actually studies done to actually evaluate what's in it. And guess what this study showed? It's pretty much sodium chloride. It's pretty much nothing. I mean, there are traces, literally traces of a few, not 80 plus, but a few other minerals that contribution will be completely insignificant to the overall intake. You know, so these are completely made up stuff. Now, I actually tell whether students or you know, people in seminars like this that Himalayan salt should be taught at every university, not from the nutritional standpoint, in the marketing departments. You know, because even though it is completely bogus product, that there is virtually no difference between it and regular table salt, yet it costs four times as much, if not more, than the regular salt. Okay, and the last thing I'm going to say, if in case you wonder, what about the pinky color? You know, you have to go to Utah to understand it. Well, you don't necessarily have to go all the way to Utah, but if you have ever been to Utah, have you? If you ever go to Utah, you will see that the soil has a rustic color, okay? Very browny, rustic looking. What is it? It's called iron oxide, okay? So Himalayan salt contains traces amount of iron oxide. That's what gives it pink color. Now, that doesn't mean that it contains a lot of iron. It's completely barely measurable iron oxide content, you see? That's what gives the pinky color. But other than that, it is completely bogus. Personally, I buy sea salt, but that's just my personal preference. I believe it's actually a little better than the pure table salt, you know, but the difference is, again, a minor. Okay?
What do you use? Celtic sea salt?
Which one?
Celtic?
No, just sea salt, yeah. What I do is, I go to a grocery store, whether Walmart, Supercenter, or any other one, and there are usually different varieties, and I usually just buy the cheapest sea salt, iodized salt that is available. Yeah. Because then, honestly, there's no difference, okay, between them.
You say the sea salt says it's iodized?
Yes. Yes, iodine is added to salt, right? Yeah. And we need the iodine from the salt. It's the main source of iodine.
I've seen, if it said sea salt.
I've
never seen one with iodine. I mean, like Celtic sea salt comes from France and so on. They're not iodized.
Yeah, there are salts that are not iodized, but there are salts that are iodized. And I believe that we need the iodized salt because that's the main source of iodine, actually, in our diets. Because the soil is depleted with iodine, okay? And so, before iodine was added to the salt, there were a lot of people with iodine. There was a study done in Michigan where 39% of people had goiter, iodine deficiency. That was back in the 1930s. Because iodine has been added to salt in 1941, and the problem basically disappeared. So that's what I buy. So, good question. Any other? Yes, one more. Sorry. Juicing. Okay. All right. So juicing is fine. We can juice or we can buy juice now. When it comes to children needs to be careful with how much juice they drink. In fact, infants are not recommended to drink any juice. Only past the first 12 months, children are recommended to have juice, but only no more than 4 ounces and always diluted half-half with water. Okay, and that is because of the calories, you see. Juice contains as many calories as a sweetened beverage. When you take a can comparison to can or a cup in comparison to cup, it contains as much. So it's fine to have some juice, I have a juicer and I make juice out of carrots, for example. And I buy orange juice, I like them. I occasionally drink apple juice. But again, how much? Because if we drink too much, okay, it will contribute to the caloric intake and may contribute to the obesity. And especially, again, for children, we have to be careful because children have to ingest a nutrient-dense diet. And juices are the least nutrient-dense. They are more caloric-dense than nutrient-dense, you see. So some juice is okay, but not too much, okay? I would say if you have a cup, at the most a cup and a half of juice a day, you should not have more than that. That would be my recommendation. Yeah. And preferably if you make your own, make like a combination or mixture of different foods, not just one juice. That way you will get benefit from the combination, So, but I love carrot juice, so I buy a 5 pounds bag and put in the refrigerator. When it's chilled a little bit, I juice it, and I like the chilled carrot juice. Very, very tasty. So.
By itself, or you add some apples to it?
I prefer just carrot juice. Yeah. Occasionally, I may add beets to it, but adding apples would be fine. Just my personal preference is, I prefer just the carrot juice or the in comparison to with apples or with beets even. So.
What about when you buy it at the store and it's in glass jars, and or you know, you have the organic ones that are in glass jars.
Well,
do they have they lost so much that it's more,
well,
it's
in terms of the loss of nutrient, it's more related to what happened to the fruit slash vegetable prior to making the juice than after the juice was made. What I mean by that is, let's say we have an orchard here, right? And we pick, you know, the fruit, and then before we make juice, it takes a month, because it takes a month to pick all the food, you see? And in that month, you know, there is some losses because the apple or pear or whatever is no longer on a tree, you see? That will have a bigger impact than once the juice is made, because once the juice is made, it has to be incorporated either, or has to be either put in the freezer or packed with sealed, you know, container. Otherwise, it will get spoiled, you see? So that's done relatively rapidly, you see? So it's more important what happens, the storage condition, the degree of ripeness, the time between picking and making the juice. That's more important in terms of the nutritional content than once the juice is made and then what happens with it.
But it's, what have they done before where they put them in the jar? I mean, when you...
Yeah, once the juice is made, they put them relatively quickly. They have to, because it will get rotten very quickly.
So if you don't have a juicer, it's okay to get to buy the organic?
Sure. I buy the orange juice, for example, you know, and I usually buy the original, which means everything that is in the juice as we make it is in there, you know. But yeah, that's perfectly fine. Pastor?
No, I just want to tell you a story that happened to us like 3 or 4 years ago. My wife was very excited about this juicing diet, you know, like vegetables. And I paid like almost $300 for this fancy juicer that is right now collecting dust in my kitchen. You can make juices with a blender that costs like $20. You don't
sure.
need a juicer. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just a waste of money.
Yes.
Know? Right now, it's in there, nobody uses it. Like, why would you use that thing?
Yes. The so-called juice diet, I would not recommend it. Adding juice just for the flavor to the overall food that we eat, that is fine. But never go on the, you know, many-day juice-only type of diet. That's just not very healthy for us, you know. And I have a juicer at home that I used to actually have a bigger juicer that I think I paid $150 for. But it broke on me after about 12 years. And so the new one that I bought was less than $30. You know, this German store, Lindl, that you told me you don't have it yet here, right? We have it in Greenville. And I saw the juicer there. It was, I think, $29. And then I bought it. Serves very well. In fact, it's actually easier to clean it than the more expensive one. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate again you being here. I hope you learned something. And if you would like me to come back sometimes, I'd be glad to do that. Okay.
You said you're going to be in North
Augusta? In September, the second weekend or the third weekend, I can't remember now, of September. So, why don't we end with a prayer, just like we started? Okay. Pastor, would you lead us?
Sure. Heavenly Father, we are very grateful for the information that Dr. Rome has brought to us, and we ask you to help us to implement these devices so we can have their help. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.